When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Wild Tales podcast. My name is Jason Fox, and on this podcast I'm going to be speaking to some inspirational people about their lives and adventures and looking at issues like resilience and the benefits of hitting the great outdoors. There's a special offer for you all on a bottle of their single malts, so listen out at the end of this podcast. My guest today is Frankie Bridge, who with her work in the Saturdays and also as a solo artist has sold over 10 million records worldwide. She is also a TV presenter and an important campaigner for the mental health charity Mind and the charity Marie Curie. She also recently trekked across the Himalayas for the breast cancer charity Copperfield. In this chat, we talk about her trek, as well as her highs and lows of fame. I hope you enjoy it. So this is episode what?
Three.
No, it's not. Four. We did a live podcast. So this is episode four of the Wild Tales podcast, and I'd love to introduce you all to Frankie Bridge.
Hello.
Some people might think this is a weird fit for the Wild Tales podcast. So, although, actually, no, hang on. The link, I suppose, is mental health.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a big advocate of that, and you yourself also talk out about it. But obviously, this is a lot also to do with Wild Tales. Obviously the clue's in the title, and people wouldn't really link you to that sort of, you know, the outdoor lifestyle, would
no
they?
No, not really. Definitely not.
So with that in mind, there is actually good reason for you to be in here, because the Himalayas.
Yes,
you've just come back.
I have, yeah.
Go on then.
Yeah. It's something I've always wanted to do, not necessarily the Himalayas, but I've wanted to do a trek before, just because it's just so far out of my comfort zone, and obviously you normally do it for charity or whatever, so so there again there's another reason for me to want to do it. So Copperfield, my friend Giovanna, she kind of runs it, and she asked me every year if I would do it, but they want you to kind of sign up to it like a year in advance.
Yeah.
So I've never been able to, so I just said to her, look, ask me every year and one year I will be able to do it. So this year was the year. And it was the Himalayas.
Awesome. I did something for Copperfield.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I ran the Bath Half Marathon.
Oh, I wouldn't do that.
No, dressed as a tit. It was embarrassing.
I couldn't run a marathon.
It was only a half marathon.
Oh.
It wasn't.
Oh, well, that's all right then.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on then. I digress. Let's get back to the Himalayas. So she asked you, you said yes.
Yeah. I didn't really know that much about it. Me didn't even really know where the Himalayas was. That's how stupid I am. And then realised, obviously, I would have to go to India, which is somewhere that I have always been quite nervous of going to.
Why?
Just because, I don't know, like, my sister went travelling there, and she was like, it just kind of ticks all of your, like, anxiety boxes. It's noisy. it can be quite dirty and busy, so I was quite nervous about that. But obviously we only landed in Delhi, travelled through Delhi, and then once we were in the Himalayas it was completely different. But it was, even getting there was quite intense.
Yeah. Did you go to you obviously went into Kathmandu. Did you would have done nothing. Maybe.
Is that we like got two planes, then like some 4-hour coach journey, and then we got a sleeper train from New Delhi to somewhere and then a 4-hour coach journey. So it took us like 3 days to get there.
Bloody hell, that sounds like a mission in itself.
Yeah, and the sleeper train for me was like my OCD of like cleanliness and stuff. I was absolutely dreading it, and actually it was fine. I mean, I had to go to the toilet, I had to stick tissues with Ulbasoil up my nose to be able to like handle it because it smelled so bad in there. It was the only way I could cope, and I disinfected the bed and everything. And I was like, by the time we got to the mountains, I was like, if you told me this was the trek, I'd believe you right now, because this was in a lot.
So what was the trip? What did you actually do once you got up there, once the journey had finished?
What do you mean? Oh right, so it was about 4 days trekking. Don't ask me heights and all that because I do not know.
Yeah.
I think like the third day was our highest day, and that was like felt more like climbing. And that was actually, although it was the hardest day for me, that was the most fun because it was just,
yeah,
I don't know, like felt like little mountain goats like trying to get up. And I was like in charge of like 20 odd other people. Like I was team captain. I've never done it before. I was like, who the hell put you in charge? I don't know. it was good. Like it was so nice getting to know everyone, learning everyone's reasons for being there. And I definitely went through like a whole emotional roller coaster while I was there myself. So I'm glad I did it.
Was it physically hard?
It was, but not as bad as I thought. Because I work out a lot, but like I'm not consistent and I didn't train for it.
Yeah.
And I thought my legs were gonna like, I remember just before I left, I went like, that's awful. I walked up a slight incline to up to a car park and was like, oof, that, like, I felt the burn. And I was like, I'm going to be fucking screwed on this thing. And Wayne was like, yeah, you've got no chance. but actually, it was more my ankles and my feet that hurt. Like, my legs and my thighs and everything was absolutely fine.
What about the altitude? Did you struggle to breathe?
No, because I don't think we went over, like, 3,000. So some people did a bit,
yeah.
But I suppose like I go snowboarding and skiing, and so I'm semi used to going a bit higher than others. I don't know; it didn't really bother me.
Right, okay.
That probably means absolutely nothing.
No. Well, actually, it doesn't. You don't have to be that high for it to start affecting you. I've done stuff really high and been all right, and thought right that I'm obviously sound with it. And then a couple of years ago, I flew into a place in Peru that was at about 3,000 meters, not that high, and I got off the plane, I couldn't breathe, and I was having like panic attacks in my hotel room when I was waking up in the middle of the night. Like, I was like, bloody hell.
It's weird, so
it can just
it can
I think it can affect you at any time. It just, I don't know what it's about.
Yeah, luckily I was fine.
The journey back, was it just as chaotic?
No, it wasn't as bad on the way back. And I think like we were really lucky with our camp in that it was really nice. I ended up with like, I mean, a really basic room. It just had four walls basically and a door. Yeah. So I ended up not being in a tent, and like the food was amazing and everything. So actually like camp I thought was going to be a lot worse than it was. Yeah. And we never moved camp, so we just went up and down to the same place.
Right, okay.
But by the last day, I think for me, maybe where I'd expected the whole thing to be so much worse, I enjoyed it because it was better than I expected it to be.
Yeah.
But by the last day, because I'd completed it, I remember everyone was having like this big party and celebrating everything for the last night, and I just couldn't get into it, and I just rang Wayne and I was like, I'm just ready to go home now, I've done it now, I just want to come home, and I know it's going to take me 2 days. And he was like, yeah babe, I'm just trick-or-treating with the boys. I was like, it's okay, just go. So I think I was worried about the journey back, but in the end we did like a 12-hour coach journey and then the two flights. So
how long were you away for?
It was like about 9 days.
Do you miss the family?
Yeah, it's more like a guilt. Like when I'm leaving, I feel awful, and then once I'm gone, I'm all right. And then when it's near the end of whatever trip I'm on, that's the bit where I'm like, okay, I just want to get home now.
Yeah, yeah.
But the way I have to like rationalize things is either one, that I'm working, or two, that it's for charities. So like I'm like, well, it's for a good cause.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
You know, I can suck up 9 days, but and the kids don't even blooming notice.
Wayne didn't notice.
No, Wayne doesn't care. He has an easier life.
He's having too much fun trick or treating. Have you ever done anything like that before?
No, that's like the first thing I've ever done.
Camped out? camping, shit
I've been
like that.
Camping when I was younger. Like, when I was younger, I was a massive tomboy. I was going to say toy boy. That's completely different. yeah, I was a massive tomboy. Like, I was always out playing with mud and worms and, like, always, like, I enjoyed, like, doing assault courses and stuff like that. But I think then where, like, I ended up in a pop group and then in a girl band, it kind of wasn't... I didn't have time, and B, I suppose it wasn't really what it was expected of me. So it's not completely out of my, like, I suppose it is within me to be a bit like that, but I just haven't had the opportunity for years. I'd like to do more.
Well, we'll come to that in a minute, actually. What was the biggest challenge for you on that trip?
So many things. I think...
The
toilets, cleanliness, food was a big thing, and then that ended up being all right. For me, it's like, I'm quite socially awkward. I'm really good at hiding it, but the big build up for me was like, there was 100 people there that I didn't know, and then knowing that I was gonna have to, like, kind of sleep with these people, travel in, like, close proximity, and then, like, go up and down a mountain with them, and people that were probably relying on me to kind of keep up morale and stuff, when it was something that I'd never done before as
well. Did you know anyone out there?
I knew like 2 people.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, and they weren't on my team.
So what were your coping mechanisms to deal with that sort of anxiety? Was it anxiety?
Yeah, I think I just kind of fake it till I make it. Like, I just act like I'm confident, and then once I'm comfortable and in there with everyone, then I can relax. But it's just that initial thing.
Yeah.
And there's always that thing in the back of my head that I'm like, oh, they're gonna not like me straight away. Or I think once you're kind of in the public eye, people have like a preconceived notion of what you're gonna be like, and I'm aware of that. So I'm always like, I'm just instantly worried going in. But I just found everyone was so open and honest about everything.
Yeah.
So I found it really easy to be as well. So it just kind of... I was really lucky with my team.
I think it, like, getting outdoors and doing that sort of basic stuff does... It breaks barriers down a little bit in people's heads. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I was like... Not to be like, I was weeing in front of all these people that I'd only just met by like day 2, like all passing down toilet roll, like, you're right, mate, yeah, here you go, like, all like crouching on the floor. So I think once you've reached that point, you kind of pass that awkward
stage. You should come on the SAS show, you'd probably do all right.
No,
it sounds a bit like that.
Absolutely not.
See if you can sort of get up there with Wayne.
I'm kind of, no, because everyone was nice on this trip. I feel like once one of you lot screamed in my face, I'd just be like, no,
yeah.
I gain nothing from carrying that thing up that massive hill for you to just tell me I'm shit.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Did you benefit from that Himalayan trip? Do you benefit from it mentally?
Definitely.
Physically?
Physically for probably about a week when I got back. And yeah. I was like, yeah, I'm going to, like, you know, my legs feel really strong and I've lost a couple of pounds and I'm going to keep it up. And then biscuits happened and that didn't happen anymore. But mentally, 100%. I find, like, with my anxiety over the last couple of years, I try to do things that scare me because it's almost like proving my anxiety wrong. So it's like I told myself I wouldn't be able to do it. I was going to not be able to complete it. I'd hate it and all this stuff. And actually, none of that happened. So it's like the next time I'm anxious about something, it gives me... like warranty to be able to be like, no, look, you thought you couldn't do that thing and you did, so this is going to be no different. So it just kind of makes me feel stronger every time.
You end up becoming comfortable in the uncomfortable situation, then it doesn't become uncomfortable.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which I think can also be a little bit addictive.
Yeah I know. Yeah, I'm the same. I think I'm scared of heights and I always do crazy stuff up high, so I don't know why I do it, because I always get like sweaty palms and stuff like that. But
you're still scared of it as well, even though you do it.
Yeah, I don't... See, I'm trying to work that one out. Because when I think about, like, when I'm going to go and do something up high, I sort of, like, get worried about it. Then I go and do it, and while I'm doing it, I'm like, well, she's all right. And then I think, well, I'm over my fear of heights. And then it comes back again. You're like, for fuck's sake.
I have that weird thing when I'm up high where I think, what if I just jumped?
Yeah.
It's not that I want to, but it's just, like, that fear of that I might.
Yeah.
And I won't. But I don't know what it is. It's so weird. What if I jump?
I think lots of people get it.
I had someone as well on my podcast the other day, and she was like, I have that thing if you know, the like stalls at the theatre, the higher ones,
yeah,
those stalls, whatever.
Yeah.
And she said she has this weird thing where she's like, what if I throw someone over the edge? I was like, oh my God.
I mean, that's even worse than wanting to do it yourself. You can get into trouble for that shit. Right, okay, we've already spoken about the fact that you've been a bit outdoorsy in the past, so that's your sort of like fundamental building block to want to go and do the Himalayas.
Yeah, I think so.
So you get anxious around people, or before seeing people.
Yeah.
Your career has pretty much been about being in front of people and gobbing off and prancing around and singing. And you've been doing it since you were young.
Yeah, since I was 12.
12?
Yeah, 30 now. Been around a long time.
What? So how did it start?
I was in a band called S Club Juniors when I was younger. Basically, S Club 7 did auditions. And it was like a bit like X Factor, but for kids on CBeebies. It was like they put this thing out for an audition. But that was before any of that was really a thing. And then... yeah. I just convinced my mum the night before that she'd want to take me. I went, didn't even have a song practiced or anything. And at that time, I was doing auditions and stuff anyway, because I was at stage school. And I got in. And none of us really knew what it was for. It was actually to perform a night at Wembley with S Club 7.
Right.
And then Simon Fuller, who manages Spice Girls and S Club 7 and stuff, decided to make us into a pop group. And then that was it, really. Like, I left school...
How many of you were there?
It was 8.
What? So when did you leave school?
When I was 12. So at first I would do like 2 weeks at school, awesome. 2 weeks off. Oh, I still had to do work. Yeah, we had tutors.
Right, okay.
And I had to do like 15 hours a week of schoolwork. So sometimes that would be on a tour bus or whatever, anywhere really. So we'd get up at like 3 in the morning, do SMTV, CD UK, and then come back to a house and all sit and do our GCSEs or whatever we were doing. It was weird.
Bloody hell. So what was it? You just became a pop star?
Yeah, I think at that age you don't really realise what it is.
Was it fun?
Yeah, like I loved it. And we had like what is very different to how the industry is now, is we had our same team all the time. So we had the same makeup artist, stylist, driver, because we obviously had to be really well looked after. So I felt really safe. And it was, for me, it was just like, oh, I'm not at school. Like, I'm getting to do this thing that I love. Yeah. And obviously, financially, that wasn't a thing. And social media wasn't a thing. So I just was in my own little bubble of...
So what happens? You get paid for it?
Yeah.
So where does that go? Because you ain't got a bank account when you're 12.
I don't actually know, because it was all like... yeah, well, Mum and Dad, no. But it was like, I always get really like... Don't get me started. Like, I listen to LBC and stuff, and like when I get home, Wayne's always like, oh, you've been listening to LBC again, haven't you? So I come home like irate about something. And what used to annoy me was that when I was younger, when I was 12, because it hadn't really happened before, there hadn't been like a child pop group for a long time.
Yeah.
We had to be under all like the theatre rules, which didn't really work because we were working all the time, so we weren't always going to the same theatre, doing the same thing day in, day out. So, and they didn't really like us being paid because we were so young. Like, it was like this issue that we were getting paid a certain amount of money, but yet they still taxed us. So, you know.
So what's the theatre rules and what do you mean by that?
Well, at the time, children were only in theatre shows. So it was like you had to be finished by a certain amount of time. Silly things like you had to give your chaperone your purse to look after your money or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, like, obviously, when you're touring and day-to-day stuff, that didn't really make sense. So it took a lot to get all the laws and everything and sorted out. I don't really know the ins and outs. Yeah. But, yeah. So we were... It was... They obviously had to be super careful about looking after us.
And you just... And you basically just travelled the country singing songs and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. At one point, we lived in Barcelona for 3 months. We filmed a TV show over there. So I'd, like, be in costume, be doing my schoolwork, and then get pulled out for a scene, go and do that, and then come back. I actually left... Because we had these, like, big folders, I left half of my maths GCSE in Barcelona, so I never learned it. So I didn't do very well in my maths GCSE.
What, How long did that go on for, S Club Juniors?
I think it was until I was about 15, 16.
Right.
And at that point, I then got signed on my own for about a year, with Simon Fuller, and I just was a bit lost. I think where I'd had people telling me what to wear, what to do every day, I was a bit like, then all of a sudden Simon was like, well, what music do you want to do? And I was like, I don't really know. Like, I would go shopping and not really know what I wanted, or, and like all my friends were going to uni, starting to think about going to uni and stuff like that. And just a bit like, didn't really know. So I kind of had some time out. I worked in Sugar Hut in Essex, which is on the Only Way is Essex.
Oh, right, okay.
Worked in there for a bit behind the bar. Worked in All Saints in House of Fraser.
Was that when the Only Way is Essex was on?
No, or was it was way before that, yeah. Okay. I think it's burnt down like twice since then. Now it's a thing. It's a cool thing. But yeah, and I actually really liked that because for me it was like almost like a novelty of like having a normal job.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't enjoy the paycheck, but the rest of it was fun.
But then, so you did your Sugar Hut stuff.
Mm.
We got to get down to the Saturdays. Yeah. How did it all happen?
It was a bit of a random one, the Saturdays, because I kind of like, I went off and I became a bit of like an emo kid. I don't know if you know what that is. Like,
yeah, I know.
A bit gothy. So I went off and like did all that, loved my life for a bit. And then, like I said, like when all my friends started like applying for unis, I was like, maybe I'll apply for uni and get in, like, because you can get in of having done a job or whatever. So I was going to do, like, management, music management or whatever. And then I was like, actually, I don't really want to do that. So I went into my old record label, Universal, and was like, yeah, I think I want to do music again. But I went in there with, like, I had, like, black and yellow hair, like, this big black eyeliner. And they were like, oh, what's your favourite band? And I was like, yeah, Enter Shikari, which is like a pretty much a screamo. Yeah. They must have been like, what the fuck's happened to her? And then I went on holiday to Zante with one of my mates because everyone was going on holidays. And it was probably like one of the worst holidays of my life. Like, just like having been in like this little bubble. And I got a call while I was there saying, oh, we're putting together a girl band. Do you want to come and see us with Universal?
Who phoned you?
A guy called Peter Lorraine, who I'd worked with.
Oh, right, okay, juniors. Right.
And so when I got back, me and two of my mates went to Kensington and I went and met them. And I come out and my mates were like, oh, so what was that about? And I was like, I think I'm in a girl band. And they were like, what do you mean? And I was like, well, they asked me if I wanted to be in it. And I was like, okay. And then that's kind of how it happened.
And what, and they just asked, you didn't know the girls before?
No, so I did. So then, like, they'd been doing, like, these big load of auditions, and then I kind of went in at the point where they had, like, the last eight girls left. And one of those girls was Rochelle Humes, who was in S Club Juniors with me.
Yeah.
So I knew her, and then we did a couple more auditions of us, like, they kind of, like, to see who works with who.
Yeah.
And then they chose us five, and then that was that, really. It was like, I just kind of...
What year was that?
Not fell into it, I suppose, but I kind of did. I don't know. I think I was about like 17 or 18.
What? And then it just... So that was formed. They called someone called it the Saturday. Go on. Why the Saturdays?
Well, basically, we couldn't come up with a name. And then there was like these people that it's their job to do that. And then we were like all in a big room, a bit like this. And everyone had to like come up with names. This is literally how it happened. Come up with names, write them down. And then we stuck them all up on the wall. And then everyone had to go around and put a star next to the ones that they liked. And then whatever one had the most was basically the one. And I think we went for the Saturdays because at the time we were like, yeah, normally it's not like pop bands that have the word the in the name. You know, it's not that obvious. And they're like, Saturdays are a really fun day. And that was pretty much it. I wanted I wanted it to be called Girls Can't Catch. I don't know why. I had a real thing about it at the time. And everyone was like, no.
I'm joking.
So that was it. And then every time I met anyone and they were like, oh, what's your band called? They're like, the Saturdays. And they're like, all right, like, just completely disappointed. But then you just become it, so
yeah exactly. But then it became like massive.
Like,
was there social media at this stage?
Not at the beginning. So at first it was like when we first started, forums were just kind of starting to get thing. And so we had to start signing in. So we'd do a gig, come back, and they'd be like, just sign in, answer a few questions, and then leave. Like, sign out. So it was kind of like, you never really saw anything bad. So that was kind of the start of social media for us. Yeah. And then it kind of grew as the band went on. But mainly, really, I'd say once the band had finished, it got bigger.
So when did it finish?
Good question. I think about like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, I did it as a pop star for a bit. I can't remember when. It's because of that pop star lifestyle.
I'm just so bad with timelines. And it kind of like tapered off. There was no like, right, today is the last day. I don't know. It's so bad.
So could you sort of like regroup if you wanted to and bang out a couple of tour dates?
Yeah, because we've never officially broken up. Like, we were really lucky that genuinely we got on. There was never like any big rifts between us. Obviously we'd piss each other off, like, you know, like family do. So like the option's always there, whereas I think most pop bands you normally break up because you've all had enough of each other and you can't stand each other. So it is, the option is always there, but whether it will happen or not, I don't know.
You still talk to the others?
Yeah, I mean, it's mainly on like WhatsApp. We've got like a WhatsApp
group. That's all anyone ever talks to.
Exactly. And it's so hard to get everyone together. But we do sometimes.
What was it like? I want to know, what's it like when you're like getting ready to go out in front of thousands of people?
It's weird. Like it you're always nervous, but it does become a little bit normal. Like I always had nerves, and I always used to think if I wasn't nervous then it wouldn't be worth it, because I think that's what makes you put on a good show. Because obviously it's a new crowd every time, but it's just so exciting. Like, especially if you do a tour and you like sell out an arena and you know that everybody in that room has paid to be there to see you. And that's just like a nuts feeling. Like, you can't recreate that.
That's unbelievable. I'd pretty much shit my pants. I had to do a talk. I had to do a talk once to Lloyds Bank at the NEC. And I didn't know, I didn't look at the brief because I'm shit. And I ended up turning up and they were like, yeah, we've got all this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Staff from all the Lloyds banks, and I was like, well, how many people have come in?
Yeah.
They were like that. About 5,000-6,000 people, and I was like, what the fuck? They didn't even want to listen. They didn't pay to come in here, listen to me. I was probably part of the agenda, and they were like, fucking, who's this dick? But anyway, I've the only time I felt more nervous was I did the on-pitch Q&A at Arsenal Tottenham at half-time.
I think that's worse.
That was horrendous.
Yeah, because you're in the middle of basically a circle of people.
And they don't give a fuck. All they want to do is watch football.
Yeah.
And then it came, and then it was like, and then they were like, introduced me as an Arsenal fan. And obviously all I could hear was the Tottenham men just going, fucking, like, yeah. And I was like, oh, get me off this football pitch.
Yeah, I don't think it's similar to what I did. Did you really enjoy it? I did, yeah. It was only when my mental health started getting bad, that was when it stopped being enjoyable for me and became a bit of a chore, and it actually became one of my main anxieties.
Did you see it as a job, or was it just doing something that you loved?
No, I loved it. I loved it. I always felt lucky that I was doing what I loved. But obviously, as you get older, so when I was in S Club Juniors, I didn't have to worry about having a mortgage or future was going to hold or whatever. Yeah. And then once I was in the Saturdays, again, I just loved it and I could just kind of rolled with it, because you never know how well you're going to do.
Mm.
But also, you are then more aware that you need it to last longer. You need to have a backup for afterwards. Whereas when I was younger, I didn't have to worry about any of that.
Yeah. So, right, let's talk about the mental health side of things, because that's something close to both our hearts, I suppose.
Mm.
When did it all start to sort of unravel a little bit with regard to, you know, your mind, I suppose.
I think I've always been that way inclined. I've always been an anxious person, like even when I was a kid. And I think it kind of like subsided for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was in the Saturdays, as time went on, it was like, I don't know if it was like to do with being so tired and just like I think now when I reflect back, I think a lot of it is to do with control, because you just have no control over your life. Because everyone tells you when you're eating, what time you've got to get up, where you've got to be. And it's like almost like 365 days of the year. You know, they tell you when you've got time off and this, that, the other. And which is nice in some ways, but I think it just started to feel, I just started to feel a bit out of control.
Yeah.
And I started to be aware that I was having to become Frankie from the Saturdays rather than them being the same person.
I think that's all you were known as.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't know your last name.
I was Frankie from the Saturdays in Wayne's phone for quite a few years. He probably still wishes. It's like, oh, remember that time when you were in a pop group? So I think it just was like, I think I became more aware of what people were expecting from me and what I should be to be a pop star. And it just kind of started taking over. Like when I was performing, I'd be thinking, oh, does everyone think I'm shit? Do they think I look fat? Do they like me? Just like loads of things. So I wasn't actually concentrating on what I was doing. I was just kind of on autopilot all the time.
Yeah.
And then I was in a relationship and that all kind of came to a head. And I think just like my mental health was already quite bad at that point, which kind of helped our relationship deteriorate anyway.
Yeah.
And then I think then it all just kind of exploded all at once. And then that's when I ended up in hospital.
So why did you end up in hospital?
Just because I just couldn't cope with everyday life anymore. So I was with Wayne by this point. I'd been with Wayne for about a year. And I'd started like crying and stuff over silly things, or I'd be like extremely tired and like we'd say, oh, let's go for dinner, and then he'd just find me on the floor asleep in the house somewhere. Like it was just weird. And then like one night he'd got like the wrong yogurt or something just so ridiculous. And I just had this massive breakdown about it. I'm like, you don't know me. And it, like, just the weirdest thing. And it just got to a point where we were both like, this isn't normal. This isn't right. And my GP came to see me. And I'd been seeing a therapist by this point and a psychiatrist. And they were like, the only thing really is you're having a mental breakdown.
Yeah.
So you need to go into hospital. Because I just wouldn't have been given the time I needed otherwise. So it was a big deal to step out of work and kind of take myself away.
We have to talk about it because you got to get rid of the stigma, but I don't think there is much of a stigma, or there is definitely not much of a stigma now than there was before. But the problem I think you have is you give yourself your own stigma in your head. Do you know what I mean? Because you're like, well, I'm having dramas here and I can't talk about it because I don't want people to know about it, which basically means you're giving yourself that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're telling yourself that you're the only person that's responding like this or
doing
this.
But I think as well, a lot of that is about understanding. And that's what I found the biggest thing with going to hospital. And maybe, you would have benefited from it, because I was like in an intense situation to know properly medically exactly what was happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me feel less weird, and it made it feel easier to explain to other people, because I think that's the hardest thing, is when you don't really understand it and then you're trying to get someone else to understand it's like it's impossible. If they've never felt that way, they're not going to get it. So I think if you can break things down medically, it's a little bit easier. And like now I can kind of accept it a bit more, and I don't know, I just find it easier to handle,
just easy to manage yourself.
Yeah, because I kind of know what's happening now, whereas before I was just a mess. I was just trying to like push through it and ignore it and just get on with it. And I had this amazing life and I knew how lucky I was, but then that almost made it worse.
Because
I felt guilty.
You don't feel like you should be feeling like that, when actually you are allowed to feel like that because you're a human.
Yeah.
To be fair, if someone had got me the wrong yogurt, I'd have probably fucking meltdown as well.
I know, poor Wayne. I'm like, really, we've only been together a year. He could have ran fast, mate. I bet sometimes he's like, yeah, that was probably my out there. Should have taken
alarm
that.
Bells were ringing. When did you become a family?
So Parker was born in 2013.
It's only a year after the hospital side of things.
Yeah, it wasn't that long after.
Were you married by that stage?
No.
Okay.
I was kind of like, we knew we wanted to get married. We knew we wanted to have kids. And we did that whole thing of like, oh, we'll see what one comes first. And the baby came first. and I wasn't really bothered. I wanted to be a young mum. And obviously Wayne being like 8 years older than me, he was a bit more like in a hurry. But I was always one of those people that didn't like, I always wanted to have a good career. Yeah. But I didn't want that. I didn't want to get to an age where I was like, that's all I have.
Mm-hmm.
So I always knew I wanted to be young. When I look back now, I'm like, God, I was well young, but I wouldn't change it. I was 24.
24, bloody hell. Yeah, that is quite young.
Yeah, and then we got married when Parker was 9 months.
Okay, where'd you get married?
At Woburn Abbey.
Yeah, I know. I used to go to school near there.
How did you?
Well, I grew up in Luton, yeah. So we used to go to, they got a safari park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in there.
Oh, right, very fancy.
Yeah, it was a bit fancy.
They got a, there's a good golf course up there as well.
Oh, great.
All right, okay. I just know. I don't know why that came into my
head.
It's
just out. Like, go there.
Mate, it's a great golf course. Honestly, they used to have some big tournaments up there. Faldo played there and everything. Anyway, I don't know where the fuck that came from. How did the family thing help? Did it change? I mean, obviously, your life changed again then, didn't it?
Yeah. Massively. I think I was like petrified that, first of all, that I would get postnatal depression because it's, you know, much higher risk. But I stayed on my medication while I was pregnant, which is quite controversial. But if you stay on the right one and you're monitored, then it's fine.
Right.
So I did that. And I was actually fine afterwards. The only thing that freaked me out, which sounds really cliche, was how much I loved him. Because people tell you that loving a child, which I'm sure you will know, is different to loving anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time I was like, well, I love Wayne, I love my parents, like there's loads of people I love, I can't imagine it's any different. And actually I just remember like looking at him and saying to Wayne, like, it's almost a bit suffocating because I
too much,
yeah, I couldn't imagine like him ever being unhappy. Or and I think I was really hormonal at the time, like that's kind of eased a bit, but that was the only thing really that freaked me out. And I think actually becoming a parent has made me realize that I can't control everything. And you know, things are going to happen, like hit the kids are going to fall over, they're going to hit their heads or whatever, they're going to learn, I can't control. And that kind of released a bit of anxiety for me. And also I think seeing, sounds so cheesy, but like the simple things in life that bring joy to a child makes you just realize like it's just because they don't know any of that bad stuff yet. Yeah. Like, we all started out that way. And it's really nice to see and be around that, I think.
I think kids teach you a lot, don't they?
Yeah.
Weirdly. I learn. Children are what taught me to get over a lot of what I was going through. Yeah, because I remember watching. It was when I was talking to my my therapist, you know, psycho, whatever you call them. I should know. She'll give me a right bite. And she said, look, watch these kids. I'm like, that's a bit weird.
Yeah.
They were in a park playing around and they were just doing their own shit, not minding. They didn't care that they'd just fallen over and were crying seconds ago. They were still going around enjoying just being a kid. And she's like, you need to be a bit more like a kid.
Yeah.
And like live in the moment and forget, you know, don't worry about what's past and gone. And don't worry about something that hasn't happened because it hasn't happened. And then when it happens, it's too late to worry about it.
Yeah,
and
you're like, true.
Fucking hell, yeah. And she basically gave me permission to be an 18-month-old for the rest of my life. It's awesome.
I think that's pretty much what men do anyway, no?
Yeah, I know, I was going to say. My missus is like, oh, fuck's sake.
But I think it does. It's true. Like, you know, obviously I still have my anxieties. I still have depression. Like, it's not like they've cured me or anything. And they come with their own anxieties now.
Yeah.
But it does. I think it teaches you a lot about yourself. And obviously I can't mentally now only think about what happens to me. I have to think about them first. So I think it just takes a lot of that away.
I mean, I've met your kids. They're mental, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, Wayne is their dad.
Yeah, I know. They're on a mission.
I know, they're full on.
In fact, one of the first, I didn't know you or your kids, but when Wayne came on the SAS show, there was a bit where we take him into a room, take them all into a room, those at the left, and we show them video messages from home. And I was like, and we don't normally, in all the ones that went before it, we don't normally go and watch that. And yeah. I was like, at to one of the exec producers, I was like, I want to watch Wayne, because I just, he's quite, he wears his heart on his shoulder, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He does. And I was like, he's gonna blub, I know it. And I just want to see it, because it's, you know, it's quite good. It's it can be moving, I suppose.
Mm.
So I'll go into the gallery thing, and like, I'm watching the video, and he's watching, and then obviously the laptop goes up, video message, and it's you and the kids, and you're like telling them how proud you are of him, blah blah blah. And then basically the kids get bored and they just start buggered off and doing stuff, and you're trying to talk to the camera, but at the same time, and then you just see shit flying around in the background. There's like a sock goes winging one way. I was like, fuck it. And I think a lot of it, that was what also made him sort of like get emotional, because it's just, it's your
see
home, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know what it is about that. I don't know if you're going to edit this out after, but it's like, so like, obviously I had no idea what Wayne was doing. I hadn't seen him. And the SAS people are like, will you send Wayne a video of encouragement and whatever? And I'm like, yeah, yeah, sure. So I'm thinking I'll be able to just film it myself and then send it, so like it won't be awkward or anything.
Yeah.
But no, I basically had to have a Skype with some random young guy. And
really?
That's who I had to say my heartfelt message to. So I'm saying to the boys, boys, come on. Like, they don't understand it anyway. Come on, let's send daddy a message. And they're like, all right. I think I probably was like, I'll give you a bag of buttons if you come and do it. So come and sat down with me.
Chocolate buttons, and then, not like
yeah,
normal
yeah,
buttons.
Yeah. They're really into the shiny ones.
Yeah.
And then like sat down and they're like, well, who the fuck's that? You know?
They didn't say that, did they?
No. I mean, they probably
they
would.
Probably would.
But you know, you're like, it is confusing for them. But yeah, I remember everyone from the SAS being like, and then they sock from it. So, yeah.
I don't understand why they do that.
I don't know, because I think they'd get a better message if you don't feel like you're having to say it to some random man or woman. But mine was a man.
Well, anyway, it was actually one of the highlights of the night. Honestly, I'll remember that for a long time. moving away from that. The digital world is what it is now. Social media is, well, it's fucking massive.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot to answer for, but at the same time, it is a tool as well. How do you manage the demands of, because you're quite, a lot of what you do now is social, isn't it?
Yeah.
How do you manage it? I mean, I'm on it, and now I've got a slight profile, but not on the level that you are.
I think, I don't know, it's taken me a while to get into it. Like, I was probably one of the last in the Saturdays to get Instagram, because I was just like, oh, it's just another place where I have to like give more, which I know sounds awful, but I come from a band where I didn't have to do that, and people only saw what I put on TV or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's taken me a while, and like a selfie to me was like just so self-indulgent. Like, basically telling everyone, I think I look great today, so here's a picture. So I was just like, I just can't get my head around like when that became like acceptable. It took me a really long time. And then I kind of got forced into it and whatever. But for me now, I suppose I'm self-employed now, basically.
Yeah.
And that is part of my work. And without
exactly.
I'm sure you know yourself, when you go for these jobs or whatever, it's like, that's what they look at, how many followers you have, your engagement, and you know, you can make money from it now, and fans love it because they get to know you. And I suppose for me, it's like, I don't know, with family and stuff, it just keeps people engaged and interested.
And it's a good,
it's hard,
but you can, and the thing I like about it is a platform for getting good stuff out there. Like, you do your, you know, you speak about mental health, and it has an impact on other people, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think as well, like, for me, like, even with that, like, selfishly, although it does help other people, it helps me as well, because I will put something out there, and you know, I still suffer with the same things of depression, of where I feel lonely, or I think it's only me that feels a certain way, and I'll put something out, and like, thousands of people will reply and be like, oh, that's how I feel today or whatever.
Yeah.
And I feel reassured as well.
Yeah.
So I think it's amazing in those ways, but obviously it has its problems. I do the same as everyone else. I compare myself to everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone's busier than me, happier than me, more successful than me. Their kids are better behaved than mine. Like, you know, like, and that's probably true. You know, there's loads that even though I know how the whole thing works, I still do that as well.
Yeah. Going back to like the whole selfie thing and you putting a picture up because you look good.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen to me because him, he basically picks things that make me look shit.
Why? So
like as an example, Soccer AM. We go on, he's videoed pretty much most things I did. I scored a goal and he's like, nah, mate, we've got to put the free kick. Whatever.
It's closer to reality.
Yeah,
you've
got to be real.
You're nowhere near reality.
You've got to be real, Foxy. Got to be real.
No, anyway, I'm only joking. Fucking
yeah, I can't imagine you sitting at home taking a selfie and I look good today.
What are you on about?
Just man, like,
I can't get the angle right. I look shit. Some people are really good. Maybe I need a stick.
Maybe you need a stick.
No, all of a sudden I've realised that
it's a bigger issue than a stick.
Whoa. Fuck off.
Actually, I could talk about social media for a long time.
Yeah. Right. Futures. Obviously you like getting out and about.
Yeah.
The Himalayas has taught you that you like that. Like, mm-hmm. Well, not taught you, sorry, reinstalled into your mind that it's a good thing.
Yeah.
What's coming up? What's the next thing?
I have plans for a next thing.
What is it?
I can't tell you.
What? Serious?
Yeah, I can't tell you. I can tell you later, but I can't tell you now.
Can you give us a clue?
No. It will be harder than what I've just done.
Charity?
Yeah.
I think I might know. Bridgie's told me.
Yeah.
No,
probably has.
All right. Okay.
No, yeah,
well, all right.
I definitely will. I'm up for doing more. And I said to Copper Phil, like, I would 100% do that again, mm-hmm. or it'll be somewhere different, obviously. But I definitely will. I just think it actually took me a really long time to get over it mentally because I think I was a bit like, oh, it's like everything's so mundane now. Like, I don't know. Obviously, it's completely not the same. But
no, it's
for
the same.
You, I imagine, like, when you've come back from being away and fighting in a freaking war and then coming back and life must just been so
normal,
like mundane. And obviously climbing the Himalayas is not the same, but I just had this sense of like, oh, I'm just dropping the kids off to school today, I'm not climbing a mountain. Like, it was weird.
But I think it's like, yeah, you're right, it's exactly the same. It's the bubble. You're like, you're in the bubble, aren't you? And then it ends, it stops, it bursts, whatever. But I think that's the good thing about it, is that is it coming back to normality. As long as you realise that that's going to happen, it shouldn't be too boring, because essentially what it does is it's just setting you up for the next time you do something, and it's mega enjoyable again.
Mm.
And then because you can't do nothing lasts forever, does it? So
no.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. All right. So we can't talk about what's going on next, but we can talk about your book.
Yes.
So Frankie actually wrote her own book, but actually she actually wrote it. Unlike me, somehow I got someone to do all the hard work, but I obviously spoke and I did do a little bit of writing.
Story,
yeah, I still did a little bit of it and stuff, but yeah, my I had a writer, but you didn't.
No, I was really adamant that I didn't want a ghostwriter, just because I had always enjoyed writing. Like when I was at school, I loved writing essays and stuff like that. Like,
six years
such a loser.
You're at school.
Yeah, exactly. Those 2 months that I did English, and I actually can't spell, which is why spell check is great on a computer. But I can write a good story. And I just felt like it was like a really personal thing, and I just thought it needed to sound like me, like, because it sounds so, but like, I wouldn't use big posh words, or I wouldn't, you know, like, I just thought it wouldn't sound the same.
Because you did 2 months in English school, and that was it. Yeah.
But exactly, that's who I am. So I was like, I just wanted to do it myself, and it was a lot harder process than I thought. I avoided it quite a few times, avoided emails and whatever. And my therapist and my psychiatrist both write in it as well to explain things, how they explain things to me. And they've gone through my notes, and parts of that are in the book as well. So it is quite exposing. But it's done now, which is quite nice.
How long did it take?
It was about a year. I remember going in like last year, and then and thinking, because I knew it was going to be out in February 2020.
Right.
So I thought I had ages, and they were like, yes, yeah, so we need it done by August. And I was like, what? Like, I thought I had so much longer. And like, it, my mental health took a massive dip while I was writing it, I think because of the stress of getting it done and just like learning, relearning things through my doctor's notes and stuff that I'd forgotten or just didn't realise. But also it taught me a lot about, like I said, like a lot of mine comes from a need of control, I think. And it was quite interesting. And people that have read it now seem to really like it. And that's the next thing, isn't it? Is you do it and it's this thing. And again, you're in your own little bubble. And then you're like, oh, shit, now it's going to be out there for the world.
So, you know, when I'm interested in this because I did the same sort of thing. But, you know, when you went, you were able to go through the notes from your psychiatrist and that, was it completely different to how you remembered it or how you thought it was?
Maybe not different, but just like things that I either A, didn't realise or had forgotten.
It's about you, the book.
Yes, but based around my mental health. It's not like a whole autobiography of my whole life.
Is it just your journey?
Yes, journey.
It's a journey, isn't it? We're on a journey. Life's a journey, I'm telling you.
No, it's true.
When's it out?
It's out in Feb. Don't know the day.
Basically, Frankie can't write or tell the date or find out when things happened.
But I've written
happen.
A book.
Written a book about something that happened once.
Yeah.
Lastly, you've done an awful lot over the past, well, basically since you were 12. But can you give people some self-care tips in regards to, like, how you look after yourself mentally and physically?
I don't know. I'm still learning. I think... I don't know. I just try to do more of what I like and spend time with the people that I like, which I know sounds really simple, but I think especially, like, in anyone's work or life, you feel like you have to do a lot of things and hang out with certain people or say yes to things.
Yeah.
And I'm learning to say no more within reason, obviously.
Mm.
I don't know, being honest with the people closest to you. I think the biggest thing for me has been all of my friends and family now know what I'm like, so I no longer have to pretend around them.
Yeah.
And if I do go off the grid a bit, they kind of all know why and they kind of know how to deal with me now. So there's no hiding really anymore.
Basically be honest.
Basically be honest, yeah. Yeah. And don't hang out with dicks.
Right, anyway, on that note, thanks very much for coming.
No worries.
I really appreciate it. And yeah, it's been awesome. Thanks very much. Thanks very much to Frankie. Hope you enjoyed the chat. Really appreciate you listening, and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and follow me and the Book of Man for the latest news. Thanks to Talisker for supporting this podcast and for a special offer they've done for the fans. You can have 10% off a Talisker 10-year-old or a Talisker 18-year-old at masterofmalt.com if you use the code TALISKERWILDTALES10 at the checkout. This offer is available until the 31st of January 2020 or until promo stocks last, and it does only apply at masterofmalt.com. When you go onto their site, you can check out all the T's and C's. There you go, a nice Christmas gift for wild spirits. Enjoy.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.